All right. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Road to Recovery. I'm your host, Dan Chuba, and I want to welcome you all this Thanksgiving week to our live broadcast here out of West Chicago, Illinois, broadcasting to you from you live from my real estate office here at Daniel and Associates Real Estate. The premise of the show, hey, it's a live show, and we talk about living life sober. Myself, I'm a recovering alcoholic. I've been sober now. Let's see. What's today? Today is the 25th, I believe, right? Today's 25th? I have to think. Everybody.
Sunday, November 25th.
Okay, 25th. So that means I've been sober now 17 years and 75 days, but who's counting, right? I count because you know what? Life is good now that I'm living my life sober. And we want you to know that you could join me in my journey in sobriety by listening to the show. This is a live call-in show, if you'd like. Last week we had Tammy calling in, and Harold was here as my guest. And tonight I have a special guest, and we'll talk about him in a little bit. But being a live show, you can join it at any time by calling in at 323-580-5755. If you would like to share a thought, have a question, Mike's my co-producer today, so you can talk to him off the air, or you can come on the air live. So please feel free and comfortable at any time to call in to this show. This I keep saying it's a radio show, but being that it's on the internet, it's kind of a live podcast show. And but that's okay. We used to do the show live on the radio. And we found with technology, we can reach more people through the podcast program here, through Blog Talk Radio. And for those of you who have found us, we're glad that you did. I know it's a little bit of a challenge. We're working on trying to make it easier so people can click in and listen in and participate. It's like having a show, a meeting on the air. Okay, yeah, I talk about and I break my anonymity in the program. But this is not a AA program. This is actually a program that I decided to start myself and a friend of mine, Denny. And I saw the need for people to realize that it's okay to be sober. Okay, right around the holidays. Now, here's Thanksgiving. It's November 25th. It was a great Thanksgiving. I think there was a lot of festivities, not think, I know there was. I was invited to friends, and it's a good time. I guess it's the busiest travel day of the year for airlines. And, you know, it's a time to get together, but, you know, it's also probably one of the largest or the biggest times that people get together to drink, they were saying. I was listening to the radio show, the news, and they were explaining that there were so many people that come in and they start their week probably Tuesday, maybe even Wednesday, and then they take their weekend, and it goes Thursday, Friday through Black Friday and Saturday, Sunday, and gosh, I think they're ringing out alcohol-wise at the end of the weekend. I remember those times. It wasn't that long ago, you know, that I was doing the same thing, but, you know, I found a different way to live. I found a different way to live sober, and that's okay for me. I have an allergy to alcohol. I can't drink. And for that, I recognize it, thank God, but I couldn't do it by myself. I needed a WE program, and I found the program of recovery through AA, Alcoholics Anonymous. But there's many other programs out there that are available to anybody. There's psychiatrists, psychologists. There is rehab centers. There is Celebrate Recovery through the churches. There's different programs, but I encourage anybody that would like to fight an addiction, not just alcohol, but maybe drugs. Maybe there's prescription drugs. Maybe you have an addiction to. Let's see, what other kind of addictions are there?
Gambling.
Thank you. Yeah, gambling's a big drug. Yeah. Hey, you know what? I'm going to just take a moment. I've got a guy in the background here who's joining me tonight as my guest. Please help me welcome James. James, welcome.
Thank you, Dan. Good to be here. Happy Thanksgiving weekend, or the end of it.
Yeah. Right? Well, it's, everybody's going to go back to work. And did you have a good Thanksgiving weekend or week?
Yeah, I did. It was kind of slow. I didn't really eat as much as I normally do, but that's okay.
It's okay. Well, it's okay. So Jim's going to join me for the next 2 hours. Now, 2 hours seems like a long time, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, if you break it up into minutes, sure.
Yeah, but you know what? The 2 hours pass pretty quickly here on the show, and as my guests have said in the past, Wow, they were just amazed at how quickly it does go by. And what we want to do is to bring to you a picture, a slice out of our life today, what life is like for myself and my guest James tonight, what it's like living sober today without alcohol. We'll reflect on some of the times that we did imbibe in alcohol and used alcohol, and what it's like being around people today that use alcohol. You know, I'm one of 13 kids. I have 6 brothers and 6 sisters. All of them are alive. And my father is the only one that has passed away. In fact, today I spent the morning with my mother. She is in a senior care center, and I joined her for the they have a monthly mother and child. I don't know if it's mother and son, but whatever, mass, and then followed up with brunch. And so I ate like a cow. I mean, for $10, it was a good meal. Oh, and look, and our other co-host, Pam's joining us, and glad to see you, Pam.
Nice to be here.
Okay, a little late, but that's okay. Late is always better.
5 minutes.
5 minutes. The show goes on at 7.
I knew you guys would handle it.
That's okay. Well, this is
Pam. Did you punch in?
Hi, I'm Pam.
Hi, Pam.
Okay.
I'm James.
Hi, James. Pleasure to meet you.
Well, say hi to everybody out in the audience there.
Hi, audience people.
Okay, so we're all connected now. Now we are complete.
Oh, boy.
Okay, well, that's good. Well, Pam's been a great co-host. You were missing last week. You missed Harold. Harold was a great guest, and Harold sent out to – he has 800 friends on Facebook. And,
oh, my God.
Yeah, so he sent it out that he was going to be on the air. And we'll welcome him back again because he had a lot of good things to share. Harold has a habit of sharing biblical verses every day to all his people on Facebook, which is nice. You know, it's kind of a – he reads them, he reflects on them, and then he sends out something he feels is going to kind of, you know, make them feel a little bit better. And so – but welcome. Yeah, welcome. And we were just reflecting on, we're just kind of going over the week in review on what it was like. Were you in town for Thanksgiving?
No, yes, I was, as a matter of fact. I went to my daughter-in-law's mother's house, which was great. First time ever that I didn't cook Thanksgiving. I have to say, I kind of missed it. Cooking is it's a very loving thing to do when you cook, and so... not have that. I missed that, but I gotta say, it was pretty cool just to go into somebody's house saying, here's where you sit, and here's your plate. So I could probably do it again.
Yeah, the only part about that is I have a problem. But I was at a client's house. I sold them a house, and I sold their house, and I'm selling them a house. They're going to be moving in a few months. And they invited me, and they had 5 kids. It was a great time. And, you know, being that I'm from this large family, and you know that, and now the audience knows that, or if they were listening, heard it, me tell before, but they had 5 kids, and then they invited three other couples that joined us, and it was a good time. I wanted more food. I just didn't want to be, like, pig-like, because here I'm at a family with 5 kids, and, you know, I don't know, I felt I was grateful to have 1 plate of food, but I really wanted 2.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I made up for it today, though. I ate way too much. I'm, like, hurting. And then, and then today I went to a gender party, a gender reveal party. It was called the gender. You ever hear of that?
No.
That's in your.
Yeah, it does call it.
Your generation.
James,
it's the newest.
Is looking like I don't know that I want to be here.
I'm waiting for you to see trans or something.
No, not transgender.
Oh, okay.
And if they were, hey, it's okay. But what?
I don't want you to say that, by the way.
Okay, well, it's what it is. I mean, you know, there are people out there of all shapes and sizes. This is a show of acceptance. I don't care
okay.
who you are, what you are, what you do. But this gender reveal party was someone who was going to find out what they were going to have, according to the doctors, whether it was going to be a boy or a girl.
Okay.
So that's what it was, a gender reveal. And isn't it amazing how we human beings can create parties for just about anything? There was certainly a lot of alcohol, but, you know, nobody abused it. But I was aware of it, and the host was very nice and said, hey, can I get you a drink? And he says, we have beer and we have pop. And, you know, I said, no, thanks. And then I ended up with water. And I said, oh, you had some water? I said, I'll take water, you know. But see, and this guy knows I don't drink, but he is not managing my disease. He is living life. And that's the way I want life to be. And I think that's the ideal way that we, it's like a handicapped person wants to be treated like a regular human being. You don't want to go around going, oh my gosh, there's that handicapped person, let's, I mean, they might need some help, but you don't want to treat them less than a being, you know?
You know, it sounds like more, even though it's all handicapped, I don't know, Dan, that that's the right term. It sounds like he just gave you the option to have a choice over what you did, rather than make the choice for you.
Well, I've had people say, oh, I can't, I'm sorry, I don't want to offer you alcohol because I know you can't drink. I can drink, first of all. As an alcoholic, let everybody know that I can drink, okay? Any alcoholic can drink. Any gambler can gamble. Any drug addict could use drugs. But a person like myself in recovery knows that I make better choices today. I know that when I drink, things kind of get out of hand after a while. Maybe not after the first drink, but it's the first drink that gets me started down the road thinking I could have more drinks. In fact, we were talking yesterday at the open speaker meeting, my guest speaker yesterday was a young lady who had been sober for 9 years, and after 9 years decided she had a bunch of personal crises take place in her life, loss of jobs, struggling with spouses and things, but she didn't have a good support system and ultimately went back out and started drinking again, which, what did it do? It made the situation even worse. But fortunately, by the grace of God, she was able to recover and realize that she needed help, and she got some help, and she got back in the program, and she was celebrating 90 days all over again yesterday. So good for her and Heather, and I want to say thanks, Heather, because she did a great job sharing yesterday. And that's the benefit of an open meeting. That's the benefit, hopefully, of this open speaker meeting, the call-in show, is that you can call in or you can listen. There's a lot of people that listen, and I listen to radio. I like to hear what people have to say and what people do in their lives, and sometimes I like to see how it applies to mine. So we're going to be on the show here for the next 2 hours. My co-host, Pam, my guest tonight, James, and we're going to say, sorry, Danny, you couldn't make it, maybe next week or the next time. I know Dan had some things, but sometimes life comes up. Sometimes my voice wants to play funny things too. But, you know, sometimes life comes up and you can't make your obligations, okay? He was kind enough, instead of not showing up, kind enough to call in and let me know that he was unable to attend tonight. So that's something different that I did that I didn't do. When I was drinking, I wouldn't call people. I would just not show up and then figure that they would understand, or I would explain later. And today I'm much more responsible, and that was nice of Dan to call and give me plenty of time in case I needed to get somebody else to speak. So we are live again. Just want to remind everybody, you can call in 323-580-5755. Today we are going to be doing a review of the 12 steps of recovery. And I just want to remind everybody that the views and opinion heard during the show are those of the host and the guests, and not anyone else, not AA, not the program. It's just us. We just want to bring a little hope to the world through our own personal experience, strength, and hope. My boxer co-host, Pam, is recovering from a boxing match with a bottle of wine falling down from the shelf, right?
Drinking is dangerous, folks.
Well, be specific. What was the drinking? How was it dangerous for you that time?
Well, about probably 8 years ago, it attempted to make some, and it went very bad. And so I put it in big bottles, and it just got worse and worse and worse. And so I figured at this point I've got excellent vinegar going on right now. So I told Dan that I thought for Christmas I'd make people herbed wine vinegars. And I tried to pull one bottle down off of a top shelf, which was way over my head. Unfortunately, I pulled two bottles down. I didn't know about the second one coming down. And it smacked me right in the eye.
Wow.
It did.
You're lucky you didn't lose an eye.
I know.
And you know what's funny? See, you're talking about how you would salvage this wine to make vinegar. I'd be really pissed off that the wine went bad. You know, that's the difference between a drunk and someone that's, see, I would have been pissed off going, what the hell, man, this wine, get rid of this stuff, it's crap. You know, I'd go out and get some more wine that was good. So.
No, it's, I will say, it's a very good vinegar at this point.
You know, the Who knows? I might have even drank it. I do want to stop and say thank you for callers that joined us last week or two. We had callers calling in from California, Joe and Mary, again, Cindy from Texas. We have a couple people listening in from Canada, in Tinley Park even. That's local. Orland Park, Lamont, what?
Tinley Park. Man.
Tinley yeah. Park. You know Tinley Park? Yeah, it's kind of local. And again, during the week, you can call in. You can call me anytime during the week by calling me at 1-800-I-ASK-YOU. That comes rings right to my cell phone. If anybody has a thought, a comment, a question, needs some help, because we don't want you to be without help. If nothing else, I could either listen. In fact, somebody called me last night. You know, I got a call last night about 3 o'clock in the morning, and they hung up. And I, you know, I got a caller ID. I knew who it was. So I called that person back and got their voicemail and said, hey, it's okay. If you need to talk, call me. So they actually called me back in about 5 minutes and said, oh, I really feel bad. And, you know, they said they accidentally rolled over their phone and got my number. And it was obvious for the next 45 minutes that they needed to talk. But that's how this program works. Sometimes you talk, sometimes we listen, and sometimes we sneeze. And I'm getting ready to give a good sneeze. But by the way, you know, the holidays are the toughest times for most people in the program, okay?
Actually, the holidays are the toughest time for a lot of people in the program or out of the program.
Well, okay, I can't speak for out of the program and somebody that doesn't have
a
drinking problem.
Well, I just want to say that you're not alone.
Okay, well, did I tell you what I did? I think I told you what I did on
Thanksgiving.
Yeah, my Thanksgiving blunder, okay? You know, and this, let me tell you a little bit about what happened. I went to my oldest brother's house. He invited me over for a bite to eat, and I knew I was going to be eating at some client's house, and so I thought I'd stop over to his house, make an appearance, because I knew my mom's going to be there, and say hi, and make a donation to my mom's phone cause, because she's in a senior care center, and the family have all opted to get her a phone, and it was my turn to kick in some money for paying for the phone. So I figured I'd stop over, and I ran in, and I had the times wrong, so they were actually eating by the time I got there. So I didn't want to displace everybody. I want to run around and say hi to everybody. And there it is, my brother's youngest son's wife. And she looked very happy and glowing and wonderful and beautiful, attractive, except she looked very pregnant. And I went ahead to make the comment, congratulations. Looks like you got some news to share with us that you're pregnant and going to give birth. And I said that as I was, like, approaching her. And when I got close to her, she looked at me like, I'm going to kill you. And I was like, you're not pregnant? And she wasn't, okay? And then my sister-in-law, you know, kind of said, oh, there you go, Dan. Put your foot in your mouth again one more time. You know, oh, my gosh. And then I look at my nephew and go, hey, sorry about that, you know. And I finished saying hi to everybody else, apologized to everybody else, and said, I'm going to leave. And they said, oh, no, stay in the dinner. I'm like, no, that's not going to happen. Just out of courtesy, I don't want to ruin everybody else's dinner. And you know where I went after that? The first thing I did was I ran to the club, my AA club, because I always find solace in my club. Actually, I called you if you weren't available. Call a friend. Always call a friend. And then I got to the club, and I shared it with somebody else. And you know, it wasn't one of those times that I meant to be harmful to anybody. And I said I was sorry, and I really was sorry. Actually, I don't know why I even said it. I just thought she looked so glowing and thought I was, like, catching something ahead of the time, you know. But I didn't. So what did I learn? I learned to shut my mouth when I go over. You know, it's kind of tough, but that's the thing about family, you know, and they hold you to a little bit higher standards. And I mentioned it later to some friends that I had dinner with, and the hostess said, she had 5 kids, and she said, you know, somebody just yesterday asked me if I was going to give birth, and she said, no, I'm finished having birth. Her youngest child's about a year old, but she still looks pretty, you know, big. And she said, you know, it's a state of mind. You know, it's not the worst thing in the world. I even thought it was I remember hearing on the radio, I thought it said that it was okay to tell people that they look pregnant rather than they look fat, you know. So, oh, well. See, but it wasn't worth drinking. I know.
I don't know, Dan. I think you're just digging a hole with this one.
Well, it wasn't worth drinking.
That's why you look at people's eyes, okay? Don't go below.
All right. Yeah, well, okay. Don't go below. So, but I managed to get through it and had a real nice, again, a real nice Thanksgiving nonetheless. And then here's a game that we had, too. I tell a story. There's a story I tell about 16 pieces of meat at Thanksgiving. And I'm not going to tell the story tonight, but the family wanted me to tell the story. And they wanted me to tell the story about the first Thanksgiving. And so I wasn't prepared to tell the whole story of the first Thanksgiving to a house full of people I didn't know. I'll be honest with you, I was very uncomfortable. Talking on the radio here about sobriety, that's one thing. You know, talking in a crowd of people that I don't know about something that I'm really not familiar with, very awkward. But we are quick thinkers, and what I did was I decided that there was about 15, 16 of us in the room. Most of us were adults, and I split the room. I actually found out that people whose names started with either the letter A through L was about half of them, and the other half was the other side. So I split the room in two, and I made one side Indians and the other side settlers, you know, the pilgrims that landed, you know, and settled in. And then I had everybody join in and share with, in a personal role of what it was like to be at the first Thanksgiving from their perspective. And what was really funny was they had a Japanese couple there and a couple from Manila, and the Japanese, his name was Mr. Yoshi. And Yoshi, I told him, I said, Yoshi, Settler Yoshi, what was your experience of this? And it was just so funny how he went on to say in his heavily accented Japanese, well, he said it in English, but he had a Japanese accent, and he just went on to say how very funny these people look with strange skin, these called Indians, you know, and it was really funny. And it was great. It was like what you would have imagined somebody saying about seeing Indians for the first time and how they were cohabitating. So that's a fun game. In fact, I think I want to like expand that and take different situations and scenarios. That way everybody can play in the future. But, okay.
Cool game.
The mind of an alcoholic goes everywhere and anywhere, right?
Yep.
Now, today, we are going to be talking about the 12 steps of recovery and a review of them. But you know what? I'm going to turn over a little bit right now, and I'm going to have our guest, James, here, tell us a little bit of why he's here and what you want to share with people. James, you've been working a program recovery for how long now?
I don't want to say over 10 years, going on 12.
Okay. Well, you said December of 2000, so good long time, right?
December 13th.
December 13th. Okay. Because the 12th is my daughter's birthday. I have to remember that, my youngest daughter's birthday. So, okay. And in your journey in sobriety from that, do you miss alcohol? Tell me a little bit about what got you. Give me a little experience, strength, and hope here, my young man. And speak into the phone.
Okay, speaking into the phone. Copy that. All right. Hello, Radio Land, Radio Internet Land. I always want to say that. You know, I guess I'll start it like this. You know, I started drinking at a pretty young age. This disease of alcoholism, which I believe it is a disease, kill you, and I've seen it take people out, as it almost did myself and others around the world. You know, I started drinking when I was probably about 13 years old. I'm going to be 35 in March. I know I don't look it right.
You're 40.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm
just
being funny. Okay. But no, that's amazing. 13 years old, you started drinking. Okay.
Yeah. I had my first rehab, I was 15.
You had a rehab at 15?
At 15 years old.
So you really were, I mean, you didn't just, like, take a drink. You took a lot of drinks from 13 years old then.
Yeah, I loved it. As soon as I got that warm feeling and, you know, tried that first beer and that first bottle of Crown Royal that my mom had stashed, I was hooked. You know, and of course, my father, from what my mom said, was an alcoholic, and you know, it runs in my blood, and you know, I you're just like your dad, and you know, I grew up in Chicago, so my dad wasn't around, and well, you know, I'm kind of raising myself and letting the older kids buy me beer and kind of doing what they were doing. You know, so at one point I did like alcohol a lot, or loved alcohol, I guess, if that's what you want to call it. But with dire consequences, definitely. You know, I played around with it for a good, I don't know, 10 years, let's say. I got, you know, kicked out of school, you know, arrested, got in fights, had a fake ID, so I was able to go to the bars in Chicago, and all over, actually.
Was a 15-year-old?
No, I was probably 19, 20 okay. years old. I had a fake ID. I stopped drinking when I was roughly 22-ish, 23, something like that. You know, and I bounced around. You know, eventually got kicked out of my mom's house, and, you know, I had a pretty fast, hard bottom. My mom wasn't able to control me, so basically I was temporarily awarded custody to the state of Illinois. And I got to grow up in the Department of Children and Family Services end of Illinois, which was basically just told me how to be more of a slicker criminal / alcoholic, I guess you could say.
Probably not their intentions, right?
Yeah, but, you know, the results were what they were. But it did, that move did save my life. I was actually talking to my mom about that today a little bit. She brought that up. You know, we were talking about child support. I have a six-year-old daughter, and I got to pay child support. And she said she had to pay Illinois to help me recover. It sounded like she was complaining more than anything, but that's okay, Mom. You know, she did what she had to do. Basically, what got me to stop drinking was Cook County Jail. 26 in California. Got me sober. a couple 30 days in the old clink, you know, really gave me the kick in the butt I needed.
Not a very nice place to go, is it?
No, it wasn't. Anybody that, any fellow alcoholic or fellow drug addict or whatever, I did drugs too, but I never got into hard drugs. I smoked a little weed and messed with some mushrooms. I like my tequila and my Heineken. So, but anybody that's been there, you don't forget a place like that. There's nothing like it. I mean, that place was on Discovery Channel and everything. It's a mean place. But I remember when I was in jail, I was in county, and I was thinking, you know, I had this set up. It was kind of like a jacked up Melrose place. It had a pool and a barbecue outside, but it was kind of like a flop house. And I had the girl that, you know, kind of like the Leaving Las Vegas kind of set up with the girl who would hang around and feed me drinks, and I'd stay drunk. And I was thinking to myself, you know, I don't want to go back. As soon as I go back, it's all going to start again. I did not want to leave, as bad as it was, Cook County Jail.
You did not want to leave?
I did not want to go back to the life.
Wow. You don't want to go back to the life of drinking.
That's right.
Okay.
I remember they talk about being freedom of bondage and being imprisoned in your own mind. Well, I was imprisoned in my own mind in Cook County Jail, where I didn't want to leave Cook County Jail. Because I knew that insanity was so strong and so fresh that I was going to go right back into it, and I had enough. Definitely had enough. So I actually I got out, and I ended up, you know, drinking again and dealing with this girl that probably, you know, needed help like I did. she's still out there. I don't talk to her anymore, thank God. But, you know, it was a sick relationship, it was. And basically, I was lucky enough to get a job. I remember, because I got out and they fired me. I was working at a butcher shop in Harwood Heights. That's where we were staying on the border, Jefferson Park. And I was working at Elliot's Deli. I think it's closed. And they fired me because I, you know, was in county for 30 days. And they had to find a replacement, I suppose. So I was looking in a paper, and I got a job as an appointment setter, which is a big fancy word for telemarketer. Long story short, they were an accounting firm, and they were in the program.
They being the owners?
The two accountants, yeah.
Okay, so they're in the program being the program of Alcoholics Anonymous.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right, and I suspected it because I would look at their computer screen, and I'd see, like, the triangle, and I'd see it. He works if you work it, and one day at a time, and all the, you know, catchy slogans that I've heard before.
When you were in retreatment, rehab.
That's right.
At the age of 15.
That's right.
Wow.
That's right. That was my first time.
The first clue.
Yeah. I actually went to rehab a second time when I was, like, 17 at Woodridge Interventions.
Okay.
So, and then I went to Lincoln Park Interventions from there. So three rehabs before I was 19 years old. That was my last rehab.
And none of them worked?
No. Well, after that one.
Oh, the last one worked?
Yeah, I went back out there, but then I stayed clean from 23 on.
Oh. Well, the jail time was helpful.
Yeah, the jail time was helpful, but I needed the rehab. I did.
Okay.
I did.
So
I hit a halfway house. I was in Bill's family on Fullerton. It's probably still there. But I was able to get a intervention from the man upstairs, I believe. The two accountants.
The landlord on the second floor?
You know, well, my buddy upstairs, JC.
Oh, who's that?
Top floor.
Yeah, top floor. Keep going.
Oh, the you mean your higher power?
That's
is
right.
Ooh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
I just want to clarify.
And associates.
And associates.
JC and
associates. Okay, JC and associates.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
So
it's like Daniel and associates.
Yeah, there you go.
A little higher.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Not like drug higher, but
right,
like
right,
higher.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly.
Spiritual higher.
That's right.
Okay.
I do believe he intervened, because anybody else could have hired me and not been in the program. I was still drinking though. They didn't stop me from drinking. You know, basically, I got high at lunch one time with this girl that I was still, you know, associating with. I smoked a joint at lunch, and he smelled it on me, the guy. His name was Ed. And he confronted me, and then his partner Mark confronted me, too, and I was honest with him. I said I smoked weed. So they let it go. I'm surprised. But I'm not, now that I think about it. I was having some problems with this girl, and I finally split with this girl, and I was still drinking. They saw that I had problems, and then they were able to do an intervention at lunch one time to me.
Wow, that's really special.
Yeah.
Huh?
I kind of asked for it because I suspected they were in the program, and the question I was adamant about was, getting an answer on was, is your life better? Ultimately, when these people intervene, these two recovering alcoholics, and they said yes. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Did you know about the program from the rehab that you've been in?
Yes,
Okay.
I was lucky with the education. I'm definitely well educated on the psychology and technical end of the program, as well as going to thousands of meetings over the years. Let's say.
Well,
that, you know.
And a lot of people actually have a lot of, you know, we talk about it, what is it called, book knowledge, but they, you know, the theory and application, that's where there's a lot of struggle, because it really doesn't matter how much book knowledge you have, if you ain't applying any of it, it's not going to work, and that's
right.
What you're saying, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the field experience is where you really benefit, if that's what you want to assimilate with that, kind of like going to school and then well, you know, you can go to all the school you want, but until you get out into that actual job, you're not going to see what you're made of until you get out there and fly. So
it's like going to meetings for a while. And like when I first started going, I was scared to even think that anybody would know that I was going to a meeting and that I couldn't handle my alcohol and that I needed help. But now that I've been going for a few 24 hours, you know, it's a way of life and living for me, and I want the rest of the world to know that my life is better because I quit drinking and that I work a program in sobriety. Now, Pam, you don't have the problem, and you don't work one, but, you know, we get along fine, and we interact every day on a daily basis. She gets to work with a drunk without alcohol. You've never seen me drunk, right?
No.
Never. I sobered up right before I met her, okay?
Right.
That's kind of funny. But that's like what you're talking about, school and application. And one of the reasons why I do the show is because I think that we need to take it out of school more so. People like yourself who have been working a program for a long time, which is good. It's just another day for all of us, but it's nice to know that there's other people like you out there that are normal. Wait a minute. Did we question whether he's normal? I don't really know much about him.
Well,
James,
once you start questioning,
okay.
One person, we have to go around,
okay.
And we don't want to go there.
We don't want to go there, okay.
Ah.
Okay. Okay, yes, we redefine normal in the program, so. But he's a good guy. Hey, listen, any day that we're sober, it's a good thing, right?
Right.
So
yeah.
You've had a lot of them. So keep going. I'm sorry.
Keep going
on your story.
No,
your bosses, now, you asked your bosses, basically.
Right.
You basically asked them for an intervention.
In so many words, yes. Mm-hmm. I needed them to push a little, and they did, and they 12-stepped me very precise, tactical, and professionally. They were like surgeons with it. They were.
Wow.
Yeah, they were good.
You still stay in touch with them today?
No. Actually, they split up, and I'm not even sure if they're in business anymore. I don't want to say I had a falling out, but we did a little business. I do electrical work, and basically I was too busy to go look at a job for him, and I think I might have upset him. I don't know.
Yeah.
And that was that. So
you have a chance to make amends. You know, you can put that on your.
Yeah, I don't know if it's gonna go that far. I mean, it's not like he's gonna come after me if he sees me on the street. You know, I have to shake his hand when I see him. You know, it's not like that. I was just busy, and he's busy. Just life.
Well, that's, I don't want to take your inventory, so whatever works for you, right?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, right.
Well, do you all feel like when you've gone through these interventions, do you feel even though you may not stay in touch with them, do you feel a profound sense of gratitude, or do you feel any type of unusual closeness to people who helped you kind of like cross that line, Dan? There may have been one person in your life as well, but just for some reason, they were there when you needed it, the hand was there when you needed it, or vice versa, whether they ended up being your lifelong buds, I don't know, but for some reason, somebody was there. That's kind of like what it sounds like with you, James. You know, I mean, it's just...
I'm sorry, are we finished?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I've met a lot of people in the program. Unfortunately, not all of them stick around. A lot of people that I've met, guys and girls, that I wish I still talked to, a lot, unfortunately, are, you know, have been temporary, whether they decide not to, you know, give their all, and this is just a pit stop for them, this program, or they move away, or, you know, life, like I said, life happens. The people that I've met in the program that have helped me out, I think, you know, if I could sit and think, you know, God for every individual person, yes. If I'm doing that right now, then I'm doing that right now. I've met a lot of extraordinary people that I definitely have respect and admiration for, you know, and I can honestly say I've touched people in that way too. So, you know, one hand washes the other, definitely. To answer your question, yes. There are people that I will always remember that have helped me out in this program.
Well, there's people myself that do help me through life. Richard is one of them. I have a friend named Richard. He's an attorney friend, and I met him about 36 years ago. And I make it a point to keep him in my life. There's other people that I've met along the way. Yeah, like you said, some come and some go. You know, my sponsor, Bobby Kay, he was my sponsor for 12 years, and then he just wasn't working the program the way I thought it. You know, I needed him to work it for me, and I needed something different. But he's still my friend, and he was very instrumental in helping me along the way. I mean, a lot of times I reflect on you know, situations and crises that I was having that something he said or did was key and instrumental getting me through it and getting me through it without a drink, including calling him on the day before, the morning before Easter at like 2 in the morning because I couldn't stop my brain and I was jonesing for a drink and I was like, oh my God, man, I'm going to just go nuts, going to go find something to drink. And I called him like he said because that's what he told me to do. And then I was grateful that I got the voicemail, so I hung up out of relief. And then he called me back about 5 minutes later and I was like, oh my God, he called me. But it was just what I needed, and we talked, and we were able to get through it. And you know, it's tough because in today's world, we meet so many people,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Right.
You know, it's like we were talking, and I'm looking at you because you have a six-year-old, right? Six-year-old?
Yeah.
Okay, and I'm thinking out loud. And when I was sitting with this family for Thanksgiving, he asked me what my hobbies were. And I said, well, I like tropical fish. I've always been a big fan of tropical fish. I've got other miscellaneous hobbies. And I said, well, what about you? What do you like? What's your hobby? He goes, raising kids. Now, I would have never thought that as a hobby or even, you know, wouldn't have put it in my list, but he was good at it. He was interacting with his kids. And see, I fathered three children, but I really didn't spend any time with them. Now, you spent a lot of time with your family, Pam, your kids and stuff like that. How about you? Do you find yourself spending any time with your six-year-old?
Well, I mean, as much as I can. I was with her today. Unfortunately, you know, I can't have her full time. I have an arrangement where I get her every other weekend and we share holidays.
That's so good.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you and anybody out there that, you know, I made the mistake early in my – I was out there actively drinking. Life had – certain consequences, but not, you know, not the intense ones at the end. But I let somebody else take over custody of my children, my daughters, and somebody else actually raised my daughters. And, you know, I can make every excuse in the world that I had justification, I had agreements and all this other stuff, but the reality is that I got to watch somebody else raise my kids from a distance, and there was nothing I really could do, and maybe I could have, and I was too damn lazy or whatever to do it. So if you have that opportunity, embrace it, grasp it, and definitely being sober, you would have think that I would have gotten back into that, but, you know, when I talk about my hobbies or whatever like that guy, I probably never would have thought about raising kids being one of them, you know? I like kids, I just don't have this great need to have them around me all the time, so... There. You laugh. You know, it's like a dog or something. You know, you have a dog, Pam, okay, or you had dogs, okay, and they were the luckiest animals in the world to be your pet because you stopped 2-3 times during the day, went home and walked them. You still lived life. You did your job. But you interacted with them. Where, shoot, I had a dog. I fed him, gave enough food, water for the day. And when I came home, I said, hey, quit jumping on me. We played. I rubbed them about, you know, all of like 5 minutes. And you know, that was it. Go run outside in the yard and leave me alone. That's not a good way to be a pet owner.
No.
And I see that. I recognize that. So that's why I don't own a dog now.
Why we give you stuffed parrots.
Yeah.
Wooden
animals, yeah. I hit a cat, and I didn't get along with that cat because that cat was more like me. He'd come and go whenever he felt like, you know, shit wherever he felt like.
Yeah.
You know,
then he
demanded
left
food.
One day.
What?
And then he left.
Yeah, he took off. Actually, we had a conversation, but that's okay. That's another day. So, your story, Val, from you quit drinking because you, let's just say, all right, we're going to do the review of the 12 steps, and we're in this, wow, we went to 45 minutes already. We only have an hour and 15 minutes left, okay, of the show. And by the way, folks, again, if you want to call in, it's area code 323-580-5755. Or if you just enjoyed listening, you can continue to listen to the show. It's called The Road to Recovery. I'm your host, Dan Chuba. Pam's my co-host. She joins me from time to time. And our guest speaker tonight is James. And James, you know, he's amazing me, telling me that he was in rehab at 15. I mean, we hear people and kids drinking at an early age, and I think I had a taste of alcohol, but I didn't really start until I was more like 17, you know, and that's good. But the first step to recovery is what?
I have to admit I'm powerless.
Over?
Alcohol and...
That our lives have become unmanageable.
Right.
Okay, so when did you figure out step one?
Probably when I had to wear blue scrubs and I couldn't go and try and bootleg alcohol anymore. I had to wake up in a room with a
partner.
Yeah, basically.
A boyfriend?
No.
Okay. Was it really bad? I mean, I hear some really stories about Cook County Jail. I mean,
yeah.
Gangs.
Well, no,
violence.
I was referring to actually they. Like I said, it was an early age, so they when they took me out of my house, it was from the police station to an emergency shelter on Montrose and Sheridan,
mm-hmm.
called ESC. You got to put on these blue scrubs.
How old were you at that one?
13. 13 years old.
Oh, man. Okay.
You really went in heavy, didn't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I went in heavy. It lasted from, like, 13 to about 18.
Yes.
Yeah.
But you finally got the program at the age of what?
23.
Okay, so you finally surrendered?
I walked in. I was to backtrack a little bit with the story with the accountants. Well, they talked to me and intervened. I stopped seeing that girlfriend that I was, kind of a toxic relationship with. I was able to get an apartment down by the lakefront, and I remember it was dead of winter, and I had my paycheck cash in my hand, and I remember I took the Armitage bus, I was taking it east from Western Avenue, and I remembered there was Lincoln Park Interventions on Sheffield and Belden, which is, you know, another Alano club, Lincoln Park Alano. And I remember it. I said, I can either go to the bar right now and spend my rent money, or I can pay my rent money and go to an AA meeting if it still exists. Probably February. And that was like December, probably 2nd or 3rd, right before I, you know, stopped drinking for, you know, until this point now, today. So 12 years ago, almost 12 years ago. That's when I walked in off the street, cold turkey, in the Lincoln Park Alano Club, and I went to a meeting, and I hooked up with one of my first sponsors that night, a gentleman named Kevin Clark.
Anonymous.
Yeah. Oh, oops.
Yeah. Okay.
That's okay. He's
you can
listening.
Say your name if you want
yeah,
to.
Yeah,
I
yeah,
say
yeah.
mine, but we
well, that's
didn't...
not his real name anyways.
Okay. All right. Okay. Wink, wink.
Okay. Yeah,
right. Okay. All right. But, again, we no, but I just want you to know that we respect people's anonymity here, and it's okay to talk about ours. If we want to break anonymity, it's okay. I know that one of the traditions of AA says that on press, radio, and films, we maintain anonymity, and that's an AA. Again, this is not an AA show, but it does incorporate 12 steps of recovery in the program. But I did, I break my anonymity because I want people to realize that I'm a tangible person. I'm a reasonably successful businessman, that I would have nothing had it not been for a program of recovery, and AA being one of the tools I use to get and stay sober. But there was other programs that I incorporated also into my living, one being actually Celebrate Recovery when it first came out through the churches, and I was involved in a church at that time helping it. So But it's a people program, and again, just like I think we all should do in the program, even in life, is to tell our story over and over again, because that's the one thing that's undisputably ours, and that's what helps us to grow. Every time we tell it, like you were talking today, you must have been giving some thought about coming on the show tonight, and so you were reviewing with your mom about, you know, child support or something, right?
Not exactly.
Okay.
I thought about coming to the meeting show after I talked to Mr. X.
Okay.
Earlier.
You can say Dan or Pete. Just don't say his last name.
So,
Mr. X.
Yeah, Mr.
Okay, we're not that close. That's a little extreme. But that's okay. X, right? I don't know if I want to be Z. Okay.
Mr. Black?
Yeah, Mr. Black. No, I just don't want to be Mr. Pig.
Right.
Why do I got to be Mr. Pig? You be Mr. Pig. I want to be Mr. How can I be Mr. Brown? You know, or Black. But why do I got to be Pig?
Yeah.
Okay, for everybody that's listening, that's from the Reservoir Dogs,
yeah,
right? That's a great Quentin Tarantino. Although, can we say his name on the show? I mean, is that anonymous to Quentin? You know,
yeah, too late, you already did.
Okay.
Yeah.
He's, I have, yeah, I don't even know if he's in the program, actually. So that, it, we're just referencing his movie.
Okay.
But again, okay, so we're going back to the first step. Now let's talk about the second step. We got the first step. The second step is what? Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves.
And restore us to sanity.
Restore us to sanity. What was that like for you?
I don't know. I'm still nuts.
Okay. Well, that's.
No. It's
well, that's what Pam was referencing earlier when she was looking at me.
Well, I tell you,
I
definitely see the 12 steps is an ongoing program. You know, from my and this it is something that you seem to constantly go back, maybe redo. My perspective, get better at it this time. You're not perfect. Every time you go through a step, you just go back, you redo it another time. It's a living program. It's a very, very organic-looking program. You know,
it is.
A program of maintenance, I'd say.
Yeah.
Well, it's a program of living life. That's what I. And again, that's another reason why the show is actually existing, because, and I've said this to many people, if I could accomplish one thing, there's two things that I want to accomplish, and I want to announce one thing today. But the first thing I'd like to accomplish is that the 12 steps would be incorporated into middle schools and high schools, because I didn't know how to live life, just live life. Not to worry about sober and all that other stuff, but live life until I learned the 12 steps. Because the 12 steps taught me how to be responsible for myself, how to be accountable to myself. And that's something that I never did want to do, and et cetera, et cetera. And so many challenges go on in the world today. This may be a great way to help kids help themselves, number one. The second thing I'd like to accomplish, and I'm going to announce it today and right this minute, why not, is that I would like to have one day, you know, like they have the great smoke out, and that's one day where nobody smokes cigarettes. That's the day that we want you to quit smoking cigarettes, so at least give your body a chance to feel what it's like to not smoke for one day. Well, I would like to have the great, you know, and I haven't come up with a name for it yet, but an addiction stop day. Anything that you do that is an addiction. Now, and it's your personal choice, but it could be drugs, alcohol, gambling, work, sex, you name it. Whatever it is, take one day and stop doing it and reflect on what life would be like if you didn't do it on a regular basis, and give yourself that one jumping off starting point. So being the first two people to hear my thoughts, what do you think of that idea? Silence. This is a show program. You can't.
I'd say if everybody was, you know, secluded and could be like Gandhi and just have like water and what is it, mint leaf,
uh-huh.
You know, and
yep.
Kind of meditate away from everyone in a field or something. Yeah, maybe.
Well, the program. Well,
there's so much. There's so many food. I mean, you know, it's.
There's so many addictions,
yeah.
But yeah, and again.
I agree with your idea. I like it though.
The choice of your addiction, whatever you feel you're suffering from, you know, just one day that we choose to help each other and recognize. First of all, you were mentioning getting off on your own and meditating. Worst thing that we can do in the program is to isolate, okay? It's because, you know, we use the acronym I, Self, and Me-ism to tell people that what you really need to do is stay involved with a program and don't go off by yourself. because when we're off by ourselves, that's when our thoughts get a little bit wigged out, you know, and we start, you know, it's like people have a food addiction. They start thinking that, you know, they're ugly or not this or not successful, and then they comfort themselves by eating food. You know, so the same thing with alcoholics. That's what I did. I get lost in my thoughts, thinking I'm worthless and all those other things that I was told growing up and carried on into my life, and I drank to ease that pain of those feelings, okay, which we all know now wasn't a good thing. So if we give somebody the thought, the opportunity that at least one day, just like a great smokeout, that they can quit their addiction for one day, maybe we can create enough hope and opportunity that they can get some help for their addiction. And again, we know that these 12 steps that we work are very helpful in that. Now, we're talking about the second step. Let's get back to the second step. Because you were joking about the insanity and that you're still insane today, right? But
not as.
Okay, not as insane. Yeah. Well, some people in the program reference the insanity of using drugs or alcohol again, even knowing the consequences that we face. That's one of the insanities.
Sure.
You referenced the one that I dealt with, the fact that I thought people would figure out that I was insane, that I was nuts, because I really did feel cool, like crazy. Like, and I often say that I didn't have a drinking disease, I had a thinking disease, and my best thinking got me drinking, you know? And I had to address, when I took the alcohol away, then I had to address the thinking problem that I had, right? So
yeah.
How was it for you?
As far as how it is now?
No, let's talk about then.
Okay. Well, you know, one thing that's actually what caused my bottom when it comes down, if you want to break down to the brass tactics of my personal bottom. I did not want to deal with that whole being, you know, trapped in my own skin, my own mind, not, you know, feeling like I was caged up everywhere I went. You know, I was always looking over my shoulder, you know, running from landlords, credit cards, yeah, okay, forget that. You know, I was lucky to even, you know, I don't even think I had a driver's license until I was 21. I mean, stuff like that. Is just, that is insane. You know, having to remember what kind of lies I was telling this guy and who I owed money to who and, you know, what person I had to avoid. I mean, you know, that whole lifestyle in itself, that insanity, that basically is what kind of, you know, pushed me to, like, say to myself, you know, hey, you don't have to live life like this. And the interventions help, not just the accountants. I mean, the constant it being pushed in my face. You know, I always said the foxhole prayer. That's one thing I always had. I knew, you know, God was watching over me, but, you know, at the same time, well, you know, I'm resisting him. You know, so I'm taking, they talk about taking our own will into our own hands and kind of doing what we want. Well, that right there is insane because I did not have my own best interest in mind when I was out there doing what I was doing. That's insane. Like you said, my best thinking got me drinking. My best thinking, you know, got me taken out of my house when I was 13 and almost put in prison. You know, that's not the type of life that I was, you know, ideally wanted.
Hard to imagine, though, at 13 years old, without a parent, without a father.
Right.
You know, it's hard to imagine, you know, I had a father. He was a disciplinarian to the extreme, but you had no father, so I can't imagine what life like that was like.
Well, you know, from what I understand, it was better for him not to be in my life. I guess he would, you know, get drunk, and my mom finally mentioned, you know, part of the abuse, you know, him hitting my mom and stuff. And my uncle, which my mom or myself, we don't talk to anymore, you know, that's another story. he tried to kind of be a surrogate dad, and I resisted him because, you know, no one's going to tell me anything. And at that age, I kind of didn't understand what was really going on.
I would think so. At 15 years old, it's hard.
Even at 15 and 17, I kind of was able to look at it with a little bit more, I guess, education and honesty. But even then, I mean, you know, you're 25 years old and you're still finding out who you are, you know. But by then, I had a couple years sober, so, you know, that was a good thing for me. But had I not got the education and the intervention at that age, you know, my bottom, some people talk, they go to meetings, some people talk about how, yeah, I came in here and I was drinking for 40 years. I'm not even 40 years old. The man upstairs slid my bottom backwards, you know, and kind of, you know, fast forwarded, you know, hey, look, you got other things that I need you to do. I got a plan for you. You're going to have your bottom at a young age. I mean, that's just the cards I was dealt. And, you know, there's a whole, you know, young people's and ISKIPA and there's this whole, and I get amazed at meetings because I see kids that are, you know, 12 years old that are going into rehab and stuff like that. I was in rehab with a kid who was 13 who had a kid in on the way. So, I mean, that's crazy to me. But, hey, it was what it was. You
it was
know?
Life. That's how
yeah,
life was.
Yeah, that's
and that's why, and again, for a counselor or a therapist who has not experienced the things that you have or that I have, try to help us out. Even in their best intentions, they can't relate as well as somebody that, yeah, I mean, I would think that you could relate to somebody a whole lot better than anybody with your experience and your strength and your hope. And that's why you were chosen. That's why I was chosen to be an alcoholic or a drug addict in recovery, because we need to continue to carry the message to those people that need to hear it. And they're the ones that are going to listen to you, because this 13-year-old who had a kid may listen to you because you were 13 when you got thrown in, and he might go, wow, you know, there's what's in store for me in my future. And all you can tell them is what you went through and survived. You know, I'm sitting in the office, and I'm looking around the desk, the desks here, and there's three of us sitting here in the corner doing the show, but there's a lot of empty desks. And I often think of that when I'm at a meeting. How many empty chairs there are. Okay, let's see. In this last week, we heard about a guy driving the wrong way on the expressway. We don't know if it was drug-related, but in the last couple of weeks, there were several drug or alcohol-related car accidents or people getting run over by trains. You know, things that just don't happen out of the ordinary, they usually are encouraged or enhanced by the abuse of alcohol. And that's sad. I mean, those people's lives, not only are they're gone, but it impacts the people who's, you know. Now, is your dad alive? Just a quick, dumb question. Is your dad alive?
No, he died at 60. I probably had about 11 months clean.
Okay. Well, at least there's conclusion there.
Right.
Some conclusions, but I'm sorry to hear it. But I'm glad that I'm glad you're sober and you're working the program. So let's move to the third step. The third step is made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Have you done that? And what does that entail?
Yeah, I mean, like tonight, I needed a meeting, but I was like, you know, I really don't feel like driving out here, blah, blah, blah. And well, but I need a meeting, so I went, you know.
Yeah, you came here.
Yeah.
It only takes two people to have a meeting. You can have a meeting anywhere, okay?
Right.
And
right.
This is, in a sense, a meeting because we're talking about program. And, again, there's nothing better to do than to talk about our personal experience, strength, and hope. So, and we're glad you're here.
Thank you.
But turning our will and our lives, okay, for me, that was, like, one of the hardest things because I was angry. And, like, this girl yesterday telling her story, she was angry at God because all these bad things were happening to me. And I was convinced that God hated me. And that I was not salvageable, that I was not going to be saved because of all the religious roadblocks that were put in the path. And that's why today I try to share with people my vision of what I see, my higher power, and I call him Jesus. And I just have this picture of Jesus. Now, there's Jesus and there's God, and I believe they're one and the same, but one's the Father, one's the Son, and all that. But I believe Jesus was the connection, you know, to help us be saved. And I believe Jesus walked around with his arms wide open saying, hey, I love you, I always loved you, I will always love you, come to me. And even when I'm hurting and I don't want to be touched, I really want somebody to hold me. And I've learned through this program to embrace the love that God has. Now, I don't walk around like some of these other people, Jesus freaks, walking around and stuff. I don't have that comfort and confidence yet to share it, but I'm more and more comfortable and confident sharing my beliefs and my love for Christ and what he's done in my life. But that was a hard step for me to get, turning my will. Today, my life works better because I don't try to run my life as I did when I was drinking. Today, I try to show up and do the best job I can and let God take care of the outcome. He's an outcome person, right?
If you let him, yeah.
Yeah, you know. It's how many times we put it in God's hands and then take it back and say, no, God, you're not doing it right. I don't want it done that way. I want it done this way. In fact, this conversation I had last night at 3 in the morning kept saying, but I want this. I want it this way. And I said, what part of let it go? You don't understand. It's very simple. You have to let it go, you know. So let's go to the fourth step. Made a fearless and searching moral inventory of ourselves, okay? Tough thing to do for some of us, for most of us, actually.
Right. It's
Was that a problem for you?
No. I'm actually rerounding on my probably 7th or 8th four-step now. I'm kind of, you know, tailing up my situations and, you know, I have my list and my categories of people and situations. I probably got a little bit more to do, but I'm working on it right now, actually, currently.
Okay.
Do you find that to be kind of cleansing when you do it?
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. I'll give you a perfect example. And actually, I was talking to Dan, and this Dan, the Dan's, Mr. X.
Dan X?
Mr. Brown and Black. And
not pink.
Yeah, not pink. Now I'm really going to get anonymous here. I had a situation that's kind of a ongoing thing with a supervisor at my job. And he's sneaky and he, you know, wants to mess with the new guy. And, you know, I felt like he was harassing me, which he was. I got other opinions from people at work, and that's what he does. He's just a jerk like that. And, you know, I started writing it down, the conversations and the situations. And I remember the second time I wrote it down, like you said, like you just asked me, did I feel a cleansing? It probably cut the power of that whole situation I was playing out in my head and anger and resentment in half, at least. And then I'd go home and I'd, you know, call my sponsor and talk about it more. And I think I talked to you about it a little bit.
You did, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, now mind you, my part in all of that was letting it, and I'm sure you've heard this before, letting it linger in my head and live rent-free in my head, and let it control me.
Yeah, being a realtor, yeah. I you know, I can relate to it. You know, renting people houses for free, it
right.
just doesn't happen.
Right, right.
Okay.
And I'm letting this guy live rent-free in my head and knock me off my square or, you know, whatever cliche you want to, you know, and understand it as. But basically, I'm letting this guy mess with me. So to write things down, whether it's, you know, you can't always, you know, unfortunately I'm in a situation where I actually can stop and write something down. But, you know, you can't always do that.
Mm-hmm.
That four-step is definitely something, yeah, the cleansing, getting all that garbage out, because there's stuff that, you know, once you get into the fifth step, once you write it down, you start to cleanse and clean out all that garbage. But really understanding why you're feeling that way, why you reacted the way you did. I mean, you really got to kind of dissect your own crap. And we'll talk about that, I'm sure, in a minute.
Well, we'll talk about let's talk about it right now. And here, and make it a little bit more clear for the listening audience and for maybe you, Pam. Have you ever seen the show Hoarders?
I have heard of it, yes.
Hoarders, okay. Hoarders. And if you go into some of these houses of hoarders, it's a period of time over years and years and years. It's just literally mounds and stacks of things, garbage, trash. Some is filthy, some is not. I'm still kind of a hoarder myself. I have a lot of crap, but mine's clean. At least now it is. But there are people that have piles of crap that, you know, just really, literally refuse that should be taken out. A fourth step is like looking at that. People in the program that have this disease, this thinking disease, have hoarded experiences, a lot of experiences, and just heaped it and ignored it. We ignore these things, and we're stepping over it, stepping around it, living in this crap. A lot of times it's referenced as a bad neighborhood, okay? But if you really think about it as hoarding, you're living in this hoard of crap just piled and heaped everywhere, and we, you know, it's like getting a stone in your shoe. If you don't stop and take the stone out, you walk with a limp, and you learn how to walk with a limp, and if you walk it long enough, you take the stone out, you're still walking with a limp until you realize you don't have the stone anymore. Same thing doing a fourth step. We want the hoarder to clean out and do a thorough cleaning of this house, okay? And not only just clean it, but the fifth step, which we'll talk about in a second, but what we're doing is we're not only looking and cleaning out the house, but we want to look at how come this crap is in the house. A lot of times you say, hey, listen, that person did this to me and that person did that. It's like somebody came in and threw crap in your house. Okay, but you have to look at, and I have to look at it when I'm doing this fourth step, what role did I play? And you were referencing that. Like, did I open the door and say, hey, goofball, and then goofball came and threw crap in my house and I left it, you know? Or I was supposed to take it out and I didn't and whatever. That's the parallel. I'm using that as a whatever, for the listening audience who doesn't understand it, to understand it a little bit clearer of what a fourth step is. A thorough fourth step would be seeing a house on hoarders not only cleaned, okay, but totally cleaned of all the refuse in the house. Some people, and you're referencing you're doing your eighth or tenth fourth step, you know, we encourage people from the very start to do as thorough as possible, but sometimes it's not possible. Sometimes you can only have access to certain rooms in your house, and you clean them out. And then, after a while, another room opens itself up as we progress along and realize, oh my gosh, there's more to do. I often reference, and Daniel, I don't know if Danny remembers telling you, but I did 8 fourth steps when I did my first fourth step. 8 of them. I did my one step. I get all done, and then I go, like, I'm ready to talk to my sponsor about it. And then I go, wait a minute, all this new stuff came down. It was like a different personality of me, you know, another door opened. And I realized, oh, my gosh, there's a whole bunch of hoarded crap here. And then I had to talk about it, write it down, and get ready to trash it out. So that is pretty much a fourth step, right? And I want to take a moment here, by the way, to remind people you're listening to The Road to Recovery. This is a live broadcast, Sunday night, November 25th. Okay, we're in the second hour already. We've just completed an hour and 15 minutes of a showtime with my co-host Pam Browns, who's my best friend, and James, who is anonymous tonight, and Mr. X, Dan X, who's going to be here. And you can call in if you want or continue to listen, because we're reviewing the 12 steps of recovery tonight. And we'll start back on next week. We'll start on step one all over again, and we'll expand on it a little bit and talk about life and life's terms. But the Road to Recovery is a program to talk about how we live life sober. without drugs, alcohol, without imbibing in our addictive disease. Okay, and like James was saying, it is a disease. And I say that it is a disease of the mind. It's a thinking problem. It's not necessarily a drinking problem. You know, like if you get a cold, Pam, you can reference this because you're a very deep person and you're very smart. You know, a cold, when you go take, you know, Tylenol or Excedrin or Sudafed, it does not necessarily correct the cold, but it addresses the symptoms of the cold. Much like stopping drinking doesn't necessarily fix our thinking, but if we work a 12-step program, we can get better. And how do we get better? By sharing our personal experience, strength, and hope. So, people, if you're out there listening, you want to call in 323-580-5755, you can do that. You can contact me by sending emails to daniel@daare.com. You can send them 24/7, 7 days a week. If you want, I'll respond to you, bring up your idea. I've had some people send jokes even. But, you know, tonight we're not going to do any jokes. I had a couple jokes. Thank you very much for the jokes from Dan, actually, another Dan. And we're not going to go over jokes tonight because tonight we're doing a review of the 12 steps and we're on the fourth. We're going to go to the fifth step. Now, what's the fifth step? Admit it to ourselves, to another person, to God, and to another person, the exact nature of our wrong. So we just did the fourth step. We did a hoarding, and now we did the fifth step. And what's the fifth step? It's admitted to God, to ourselves, and another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. We've cleaned the hoarding up, and we're looking at why we made this big mess. And
right.
What our role is, right?
Right.
How was it for you?
I can definitely recognize. Well, first of all, a big tool for that step is honesty. Any of the steps, but for me to, I kind of needed that second person, which was my sponsor at the time, to help me step out of myself and look at myself and my defects and my actions of what I did. You know, and to say, hey, you know, this is not right. Good example, had some relationship issues. I still do. A lot better, though. Me being, you know, having abandonment issues, let's say, being insecure, caused me not to commit to a relationship, a woman I was dating. So
were you afraid that you weren't committing, or you wouldn't stay, or she would abandon you?
Basically, she would abandon me.
Why?
Well, that's the nature of the beast. I mean, you know, I was figuring that out. When I was younger, you know, that whole situation with, you know, me having to leave my house, you know, and, you know, my mom having to get me help, well, I felt abandoned. You know, but I also never really was able to have a, you know, proper relationship. I hooked up with a girl that it was just a couple different girls. The relationships were toxic, and I kind of let them govern themselves. So that's all I was used to, are these toxic relationships that are based on alcohol, drugs, and sex.
Mm-hmm.
Lies and cheating and manipulation.
Mm-hmm.
Never a healthy relationship. So take away, what do they say? A drunken horse thief, take away the alcohol, and what do you end up with?
You sober up a drunken horse thief and you have a horse thief.
That's right.
Sober
well.
Horse thief. Well, you know, relationships are they're one of the largest and most difficult things for anybody in the program, even out of the program. Relationships today are difficult because we have so many new and improved everything. Okay? It's hard. You really have to commit yourself to a relationship to get there and to maintain one. Okay? So for someone that has, I had abandonment issues myself, you know. I wish my folks would have got rid of me or something. But in a family of 13 kids, I felt abandoned. I felt lost. So it's, you know, whether you came from a lot or a little, it's still a difficult thing. Okay, but so the fifth step admitting to God, to ourselves, and another human being. So you're identifying with your sponsor or someone of importance. Some people go to their minister. Some people will pick a stranger. You know, you can call somebody in a foreign country, make a wrong number, and just go ahead and do a fifth step with them on the phone. And they're like, "Oh, you fucking crazy? Who is this American?" That's why we hear, you know, why the Koreans want to blow up the United States, because we had everybody calling over there doing fourth step, fifth step, to people they didn't know and ran up their phone bills. No, I'm kidding. That didn't really happen. Okay. Did you know that? I was just kidding.
No, I didn't
okay.
know that.
Let's move to the sixth step. Okay, let's move to the sixth step. You know what? But I will say, after I shared with my sponsor, okay, there was a sense of relief. There was a sense of actually an emptiness after a while, but it was a big relief telling some of the wild and crazy things that I did to somebody that I knew. My biggest fear was that my sponsor was going to dump me, because, talking about abandonment issues, I was afraid he's going to run for the hills going, "Oh, my God, stay away from this guy. He's pretty bad." And he didn't. He, you know.
Yeah, you know, I was wondering when you talk about things, whether or not when they get so much worse in your head, and when you did tell them your issues or whatever it is, the worst things about you that you could think of, were you surprised that they didn't run away from you? Did they ever say, "Yeah, I know that," or anything like that? You know.
I got You know what? I'm glad you asked that. I've probably done. Let's say I've done five, six fifth steps. Well, eight really, because I did eight fourths, right? So.
Okay, that would. That would coincide.
So, do the fourth so you don't drink the fifth. They say, right? Well,
right.
I actually probably two or three of those fifth steps that I've had done. The sponsor, actually two specific, the sponsors that I had. They told me some things that I couldn't believe.
About you or about them?
Oh, no, not about me.
About
them. Some personal experiences. I never would have thought that, hey, this guy did that. So when I'm thinking they're going to judge me, I'm trying not to judge them.
But the point of, and what you're referencing is, you know, a sponsor shares some intimate story about themselves that they've dealt with the sponsee, put them at ease to let them know that it's okay, that no matter what you have to say, that, you know, they're not going to be turned off and offended. Because I was a big-time fear of my sponsor going to run away and leave me, and nothing that he told me was anywhere close to some of the crap I told him. But, you know, there's a leap of faith, and at some point you just have to let go. So, yeah, you know, the most important thing are those guys that were sponsoring you. Are they still sober?
No.
Okay. Well, that's sad, okay?
Yeah.
But that's generally because...
Actually, I'm not sure. The one guy I know for sure, I'm not sure about the other guy. He, like, just came back in the room from what I heard.
Okay, well, the number one reason why people go back out is, and you know what the number one reason that they go back out, people go back out?
They stop going to meetings.
That's right. Number one reason, they stop going to meetings, okay? Usually it's involving resentment of some sort, something, but number one reason, stop going to meetings. Every time you talk to somebody, they'll first tell you is that they stop going to meetings because guess what? They got better. And I don't need meetings now that I'm better. Okay, I need meetings. That's one of the reasons why I'm doing this show. What benefit do I get out of it? There's no money incentive. There's a commitment of 2 hours every week with some prep time, not much, okay? But, you know, to do this show, there's an investment of money to use the phones, etc. But why do I do it? It's because it helps me stay sober. It helps me to feel like I'm doing something positive in my life, whereas before I found the program and got into recovery, I felt like I was a worthless piece of shit, okay? That I didn't count, that I was abusing the gifts and the tools that God had given me. And today I feel like at least I'm doing something, giving back, you know? We talked about it, my company, and we received an award from the City Council of West Chicago about 3-4 weeks ago, Brilliance in Business for our community service. And it was spearheaded by me. I get involved, but, you know, it's kind of joined up because I do believe people like to give, okay? But, again, going back to we're coming to the final half hour, believe it or not, of our show, and we're only on the fifth step. We're going to move along a little bit quicker. And if we don't get them all done, guess what, folks? Like you said, Pam, we're going to continue to do these steps over and over again, and we're going to continue to review. But what's most important, more so than the steps, more so than me yapping and flapping here, is that you're not alone out there. You're not alone in your wild and crazy thoughts. You're not alone in your desperation moments. You talked about, James, a little bit about the foxhole prayers. You know, we all have had them. We've all been on the firing line asking God to help us out and get us through a certain situation, because that's usually when we find God the most, is when we find recovery, or not find recovery, where we're being bombarded by life the most and we want help. The important part is not only to get it, but to keep it. And how do we keep it? By
giving it away.
Giving it away. And that's good. So do you do a lot of giving, by the way?
You know, I try. I always talk to the newcomer, especially when other people don't want to. I see, you know, you go to a meeting and kind of shun the new guy. Not all the time, but it happens, and usually I try not to do that. I've done it myself, especially early in sobriety, because, you know, we get complacent, and like, you know, Dan here said, you start feeling better, so it's like, oh, I feel better, I can go and do whatever I want now. Doesn't really work that way. You can do it that way for a while, but then you start getting into what they call being a dry drunk, which can be a whole other conversation. Kind of taking your sobriety and not really doing anything with it. Being selfish. Service work, I'll be honest with you.
No, lie to me.
Yeah.
I always tell you when people tell me that. Can I be honest with you? No, continue to lie. I mean, okay.
Yeah, okay. Are you done?
Let's make the assumption that you're always telling us the truth, okay?
Okay, all right.
So then we don't have to. Okay.
And we can swear now, right?
No, you cannot
swear. Okay. You know, my service work has not been up to par. I've had some health issues and personal things go down, but you know, that doesn't mean I can't get back into it.
Right, from so right
on
tonight, from tonight on, you're going to get more involved in service work, right?
Right.
Maybe you can help with the show. Maybe you can help promote the show or something. If you liked it, if you know, again, there's all kinds of ways to provide service to anybody. Taking a homeless person, help a homeless person. There's a lot of that going on. In fact, I think 60 Minutes was talking about, and I didn't hear the whole thing, and I wish I did, but it was talking about how some kids put together a program to help kids that were prisoners, you know, and slaves. I didn't hear the thing. So mm-hmm. 60 Minutes, people who ever listen to 60 Minutes, anybody can do anything, any kind of service. We all have to help each other out, because you know what? There's so many people in need today. We cannot close our doors any longer. We have to get out and get out and help people. And the good part of it is, when we do that, you feel much better. Don't you feel much better?
Yes.
Being part of the show tonight?
I do.
Have you ever spoken to young kids?
I have.
How do you feel when you do that? You feel like you're reaching them?
You know, nowadays when I do it, I feel like the old timer giving a lecture like I used to get when I'd go to the meeting. You know, it's not as I don't want to say as effective. It still feels good. I still do it, and I still have reached, you know, guys and, well, you know, girls too, but more guys that are younger.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I know for a fact that I've gotten, you know, I've sponsored, you know, guys that were, you know, roughly around my age, and I know I've, you know, helped some people out. But lately, no, I haven't sponsored anybody in a while. But like I said, I make it my business to, you know, hey, how you doing? Nice to meet you. What's going on with you? You know, you know, are you homeless? You know, what meetings are you going to? Give me your number. Here's my number. You need a temporary sponsor. I don't refuse service.
Mm-hmm.
When you start doing that, you might as well stop coming to the meetings because, you know, you're there for yourself and that's that. That's not how it works. I mean, don't stop coming to meetings, but it's not cool. It's like you're not the only one that has problems, you know what I mean?
Well, okay, first of all, number one, you brought up a good point, which we need to reflect on, and you mentioned lecture, okay? First of all, that's why we share our experience, strength, and hope, okay? First of all, I'm not here to lecture anybody, okay? I'm not here to lecture anybody on the phone here, on the air here. I'm not here to lecture anybody. There's a bunch of groups that go around the high schools right now. You don't hear much about them, but there's a couple people that coordinate them. And I've spoken several times to Glenbard North, I think, High School, or Glenbard West or something like that, talking to the gym classes. And the teachers bring the people in the program that are in the recovery, and they tell their stories. And that's all we can do as people in recovery, because you have a unique set of life circumstances, which we heard about being in youth, that, you know, Pam, you haven't had, right? I didn't have that. I mean, I drank, but I didn't drink till I was like 17, 18, and I never got thrown out of the house and blah, blah, blah. You have that unique set. Instead of lecturing, don't look at a lecture. Look at it just sharing your life story. You know, don't get it so canned that it becomes polished and it sounds like some sort of blowhard thing. But when you speak from the heart, and that's what I like, and that's why I've been chairing the open speaker meeting for the last year and a half, but I'm ready to pass the torch on to somebody else because I feel selfish that I'm taking, I love doing it. I love, you know, hearing the stories. Now, hopefully when somebody else takes the reins, maybe I'll just enjoy coming and listening to the stories themselves. But I do it because I want to encourage people. It's not enough to just share your experience, strength, and hope. Come out there, give from the heart, not from the head. You know, mm-hmm. That's what's really important, right?
Sure.
And it means, well, look, let's talk about, in the last half hour, we're here. And again, Road to Recovery people, that's the show we're on, you're listening to. Number is 323-580-5755. Feel free to call us or tune in every Sunday from 7 to 9 p.m. Tonight's guest is James, my co-host is Pam Brown. We're coming into the final half hour. And tell us a little bit about what life is like for you now, James, that you're working a program in recovery.
Without swearing.
Without swearing.
Okay.
Well, did you all talk about that before the show began?
No, I'm just kind of messing with them. Yeah, we did actually. You said you can't swear. I like to swear, that's why. But anyways, I'll swear. When
really
I drive home, I'll be throwing F-bombs and stuff and all that. That's cool. It's good practice. Anyways, what it's like for me now, I'll tell you what, I wouldn't trade this for the world. I wouldn't trade the experiences I've had sober for the world. They say your best, I can truly say my worst day sober does not compare to my best day drunk. Had I ever would have sat here and thought I'd say that, broadcasting out of, where are we, West Chicago?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no. I mean, I had a lot of fun, but at a hefty price when I was out there. Let's see. I mean, I got a good job. I'm a parent. I'm active in my kid's life. I try not to lie, cheat, and steal. That works out for me pretty good because I pretty much don't. I feel bad when, you know, I have a conscience today. Before, I didn't care. I try and scam you or rip you off. And I always had a conscience, but, I could tuck it away a lot easier. You know what I mean? Now it's a lot harder. I think twice before I do the wrong thing nowadays. And doing the wrong thing is few and far between. Don't get me wrong, no one's perfect. I'm not. I like to think I am, but I'm not even close.
You know, so I got, you know, they talk about the promises. I'm jumping ahead a little here, but the promises of the program, not worrying about money, not, you know, worrying about, fear and situations that used to baffle us. Well, I'm not going to necessarily say that I life happens. Life is hard enough without drinking, you know, for me. I definitely deal with life's curveballs. I have. I got my mind back. I got my sanity back. I'm able to think clear. People can talk about me and not have something bad to say. I generally, like to think that I'm a nice guy. I wasn't always, I just don't have to live with the burden of, having to deal with that uncertainty. Like I said, that insanity was pretty heavy on me. I'm a simple guy. I don't need a lot of stuff. Like I said, a driver's license is nice. That's a very nice luxury I have. Being able to, rent an apartment, hold a job, take showers and, have clean laundry. I mean, it might sound funny, but, simple things like that, I'm grateful for stuff like that.
Yeah, choice of clothing. Because
yeah.
In prison, you get the one colored suit, right? And
yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
And everybody wears it. So, yeah. Well, and again, I didn't think, I thought everybody should be entitled to a driver's license. And when I lost my driver's license with my second DUI, I thought how cruel and harsh that was to, all the people I helped out, how they were, it was the state was, hurting them, because they took it away from me. But, again, that's part of that looking at the role that I played in my life. And, I took that away from all those people I helped because of my selfishness and my abuse of alcohol and my need to drive while I was drinking, Again, in the holiday season, we want to do a public service announcement, but, just a common sense announcement, people, don't drink and drive. Okay, one drink is too much. Don't drink if you even had one drink. Today, with all the different things that are going on, it's hard enough to be focused on the road than have any alcohol whatsoever. And is it fair to anybody that we're even a least bit inebriated or loss of focus on these roads driving, in the holidays, getting to and from families, etc.? If you know anybody that's drinking and they're going to get in the car, I was watching a couple of movies I watched, how they put people in the car and say, you can manage to make it home, and the guy's holding his head and one eye open, and I think I can find my way home, and they let him home. Don't let people drink and drive. Don't let them drive home.
The movies made such a joke of it.
They really did. And
like it was no big deal, they made a big joke of it. As a matter of fact, I saw something on the other day. I don't watch a lot of TV, James, but for some reason I saw this. There's something on. It's like what are those shows, real life shows?
Reality?
Yeah. And it's all about just drinking as much as you possibly can.
No kidding.
I'm not joking. It really is about just totally drinking. I mean, these guys are total losers on this show. They're just what do you call it, power drinking or bombs or, I don't even
know. All the above, yeah.
Yeah, but it just, and that was it. That's what it's all about.
Well,
but it's just, it's like a car accident. People like to slow down and look at it. That's what I think this show is.
And it might be, and this may be the same, but hopefully.
Yeah, it's a sad thing.
Well,
yeah.
And hopefully that people listening to this show that aren't familiar with drinking and drug abuse and, what it, the pain that goes beyond our eyes. I mean, I was, caught up in my addiction for years. You said that you're, in your 30s now?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I didn't sober up until I was 38 years old. Okay, I lived 38 years, probably from 17 to 38, which was, about 21 years? 21 years of pain and misery. And not only the stuff that I inflicted on myself, but on the people around me. And for what reason God gave me the opportunity to sober up, and, you know, and I still have a big mouth and open it up and say the wrong things once in a while. Oops. But at least it's not because I was drunk. It's, you know, it was an honest mistake, and I can make amends right away or apologize for it. Doesn't mean that they're going to like it, but at least I know for me that I'm on track doing life differently. And I'm grateful for that. I'm much better about that. And I try to carry it. And Pam, you know, we work together. We sell real estate in DuPage County. And if you ever need a good home and you need somebody to help you, you can call Daniel and Associates Real Estate and talk to Pam Brown. She's the general manager, and I'm the owner of the company. But we incorporate our assistance in what we do. Okay, it is not all about the money. It's not all about doing, you know, making the sales, which is what sales basically is about, ego and pride, and hey, you're number one. But we find pride in helping people because we deal with people in their lives, their actual physical lives, and the challenges that they go through. We could relate to them, can't you?
Yeah. It's a big part of the story.
It is a major part of the story, and I think that our clients as a whole are probably better off having involved themselves with us. Yeah. Better involved with us than not having themselves involved with us. So, you know, again, that's the cool part of living the program in our daily lives, okay? It's not enough to live it inside the clubs, inside the hospitals, inside the workshops, inside the retreat centers. Folks, it's important that we live this life out and let people know that it's okay that they don't have to drink, okay? I'm not going to stop people from drinking. That's not my goal. But I'm giving people the opportunity to know that if you feel that you have a problem with alcohol or drugs, and you want help, you can get help. And it's okay to stop. And it's okay to surrender. You know, it hasn't made my life worse. It made it better, in fact. It got me to the point, Pam, where I would, if I could, go back and start my life over and reclock it, I probably would not have done drugs or alcohol at all. And I can't imagine what life would be like without it. But I do know that because I did do alcohol and drugs, that I have a unique set of life skills that I got today. And because of all the things I went through, I met you. And that was a blessing. That's one of the many blessings that I've had, is meeting my dear friend Pam Brown. And all the people that have come along, Mr. X, who's not here, or Mr. Pink, or whoever, James, Howard, who was here last week, I just got word from one of my sponsees that he just got paroled. He's out of jail, and how nice, and I'm glad for him that he is no longer in jail because he got a second DUI in about 2 months, and he was looking at some real serious time, and he's out now, so good for him.
Awesome.
Yeah, I'm very happy that he's out. And I got that call just while we were here in the show, doing the show. So how cool is that, right? Again, listening to The Road to Recovery, we're in the last 15 minutes. But we got 15 minutes, James, okay? You're a guest tonight. We're so glad you came. Okay?
Thanks.
Life's different from you, right?
Definitely. Like I said, I mean, little simple things, yeah. I'm, you know, here's the thing. As far as AA is concerned, like tonight, I like, you know, opportunities like this. Or when I was even younger, you know, newer in the program, I kind of like to think of myself as like a sober drifter. Does that make sense? I like to check out the meetings, whether they're, you know, in downtown Chicago, or I've been to the Kankakee L&O Club. I've been to meetings in Kentucky, you know, Villa Park. I go to, you know, Naperville. I mean, all around, it doesn't matter, you know. And the Spleens L&O Club, I'm here tonight. You know, I might go back up north to the Palatine L&O Club. I mean, stuff like that.
So is there any difference between the meetings except, you know, y'all get some people speaking with a different accent when you go down to Kentucky? Wahoo-wee! We get sober just the same way as you Yankees do. Isn't that right?
James, I'm from Kentucky, and I get this all the time.
Wow. Well, anyways.
But it's the same program, basically,
isn't
it?
It's the same program. I like the freedom. I like the freedom. I like the opportunities that have come in my life.
The freedom of the program?
Well, the freedom that the program gives me.
Ah, that's an interesting thing to say.
Yeah. I can pretty much do whatever I want, especially, here's the thing that's great about being square and walking a straight line or whatever you want to call it. I can, as long as I am doing something positive in my life and keep that train of thought, I can pretty much do whatever I want. And I like being able to go here and there and hear other people's opinions, hear other people's insight and input of how this program affects them, how their lives have changed,
their experience, strength,
yeah,
and hope.
Exactly.
Right.
I encourage, especially, people that are, and it doesn't matter what age you are, but I encourage people, like, I just went to the Chicago Open at UIC, and they hold that every year in it's in August, and then they have a dance afterwards and stuff like that. All the dances and recreational activities, I really appreciate those. If you're early sober in this program, those are a great type of stress release. Just to go and kind of hang out with other people, and you're going to a lot of meetings, 90 days, and your sponsors, having you, meet them every day or whatever regimen you have. But to go to those sober functions are a great thing. Those are a beautiful thing. I went to one in Wisconsin where it was like this lodge, and it was a huge, huge dance, and they had all these rooms, and it was crazy. There's all kinds of stuff like that. They have Alcathons. They have Second City Roundups. They have We Are the Saints conventions. Stuff like that.
And these are all programs
right.
that are alcohol-free.
Right.
That encourage people to come out, celebrate,
mm-hmm.
And socialize, network without alcohol, And they're good. They have, maybe you can put a couple on here. Maybe you can coordinate some. Maybe that's a calling you might have.
I can update the activity list for you.
What's
I'll
that?
Put them out. Mm-hmm. Well, because they have.
Why don't you send me the activities and we'll broadcast them on the air here. And
sure.
Talk about some of the things. If you, if you have some kind of event coming up that's sober free, we'll be glad to take a few minutes out of our 2 hours and let people know where they could go, what they could do sober, local in the area. If it's in your area, whether you're in another part of the country or you're in this part of the country, it doesn't matter. Just let us know, because we do have listeners all over the and even if they don't hear it the first time, these are archived, and you can listen to the podcast on a second time if you'd like, or as Cora, my dear Cora, says, that's a long time, 2 hours of listening to you talk. She goes, I can't believe you could talk for 2 hours. But you know what? When you're sitting here, did it seem like 2 hours had gone by? No. All right, James.
It's debatable.
Okay.
Especially with all the swearing.
Yeah. No. Yeah, well, isn't it nice that you can get your message across without swearing?
Right, yeah.
Really.
I can, you can't.
Yeah, well, I know. I did say the S word a few times.
Oh, you're allowed.
Just
kidding. Okay.
Yeah, no. Yeah, but I wasn't using it in the context. I was using it in whatever.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
It relates to the force of our cause.
Yeah, but whatever. Yeah. So again, if you the listener want to be someone, you can send me an email at daniel@daare.com, dare.com. You can call me 24/7 at 1-800-427-5968, which is 1-800-I-ASK-YOU, and you can call me there. You can join us every Sunday night, because we will continue to broadcast through the holiday and through next year, hopefully. And we just finished up, we're finishing up tonight from 7 to 9 p.m. Central Standard Time. Tune us in. doing this, Ed, and maybe my friend Pam will be joining us as co-host. As, you know, I enjoyed her company, and we'll never know who our guest is going to be. Maybe Mr. X will get out here. We'll definitely have a pink guy.
Whoa.
Well, there's nothing wrong with being pink. I don't mind being pink.
Okay,
I mean,
you can be the pink guy.
I'll be the pink guy. Okay, I am not afraid because my masculinity is not affected. And it doesn't matter if you are gender specific, okay? Because you know what? I have a nephew who is being raised as a girl because he feels, he's a young child, Pam knows him, feels more like a woman. And you know what? Who am I to mess around with that? That's not my to judge. I mean, in the past, I would have made every comment and pointed out and taken inventory and laughed and said, oh, because we're pretty cruel at a youthful age. But as I'm maturing, and which is what I got into this program, you know, but for the grace of God, there go I. You know, it could be me or it could be my child. How would I react? I mean, how would somebody react when you find out that your child who is gender-specific, a male, wanting to be raised as a female? I don't know. And, you know, I pray for that child because I understand the road ahead will be tough with people with, you know, that may find it difficult to live with them. But, again, you know, we have a big world. The world is quite large, but it's getting tighter and tighter to live on this world, isn't it? And we are... you know, what do they say, 7 steps and stages from knowing somebody? I mean, if you count, you know, all your friends, you go 7 whatever steps out, we all know each other. We all either know each other, related to each other, and the big world is getting smaller and smaller, and we better learn to live together, and we better learn how to live together. And that's, again, how you can live sober. If you find that drinking has become, has taken your life over, okay? If you can honestly say and assess yourself and surrender to the fact that maybe you no longer can control how you drink, okay? And it doesn't mean your drinking is totally out of control, but if you think about drinking all the time, I had Miller time on my head from the moment I quit drinking to the moment I started drinking. It was Miller time because I just couldn't, I didn't want to live in the present, the here and now. And today I love being in the here and now. In fact, I think life moves so fast in the here and now. Here it is. I'm 17 years and 75 days sober, and who's counting? But, boy, does that go fast. It is unbelievable how life – I can't believe that I live that much life sober, let alone live as long as I have. And, I, you know, then you go to the senior center today, and you look around, and you go, oh, my gosh, how much longer will I be on this earth? And what's going to happen to me when that time comes? Because it's not a pretty picture getting old, is it?
I see it every morning.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I look in the mirror. Look in my mirror. See, you youthful person here. You're how old? 32? 35?
34.
34. Oh, remember? 34. What was I doing at 34?
34 is a good year.
I was still fighting my ex-wife, getting divorced from the marriage I just had, the second one, and preparing for my third one, which I had when I was like 37, going into throes, my gosh. But, you know, some of us are sicker than others, you know, but we can recover. You can get some help, and you can find it in a program of recovery, whichever and wherever you find it, whether it's through therapy, whether you find a counselor, whether you find it through the hospitals, or you find it. Me, I had no money. I had no insurance. I found it through the steps and the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's there. There are people there that will help you sincerely because what is their ulterior motive? It helps them stay sober. It helps me stay sober, okay? And that's why we do it, and I'm grateful for that. So, Pam, any wishes for anything for this upcoming week? Any plans, any big plans for this week? I got a big hearing on Tuesday.
You do have a big hearing.
Somebody's challenging our... procedures, program and procedures. So we'll see. We'll see if we are correct in how we're approaching them. And again, life still goes on, and this has to do with work. It doesn't have to do with anything else. But, you know, we're going to find out if we stood on a principle and we were correct or if we're going to be humbled and find out that, oops, we did something wrong. So, but you know what? Sometimes you just have to take a stand, whatever. You know, you can't always be a doormat. You know, it can't always be the bull in the china shop either. But you got to find that happy medium. I call it serenity. You know, I pray that serenity prayer. You know, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and I pray for the wisdom to know the difference constantly. So, you know, let's see how many more minutes we've got. About, oh, we got about five. We got five more minutes still yet to talk on this show.
James, is it cool being sober with your daughter?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure she never knew you.
Right. Yeah. My kid's mom is actually a member of the program,
mm-hmm.
And she's from what I understand, she's still sober and still going to meetings. But I was fortunate enough to not even be in that situation where she saw me drunk and, you know, but she's so young. I mean, it is cool to answer your question,
mm-hmm.
Because I'm able to be involved in her life. You know, we had our problems and, you know, I had to get a lawyer involved who's actually a friend of mine who's in the program too. So... It wasn't the ideal situation, and it was rocky, and there was a lot of wasted money and energy, but that wasted money and energy would have not even been in the picture had I been drinking, if you can understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, different creates a different set of opportunities, but you get along with your daughter's mom?
I do now. I wasn't able to fathom ever getting along with her, and I do now. Which, to be honest with you, yeah, is probably attributed to me being sober and going to meetings and talking and doing fourth and fifth steps and understanding what my fault was. What the outcome, you know, can be if I choose to do this or choose to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, understanding that, hey, I have a choice, how I react and what I can control. I mean, that's huge. Without the program, little things like that, I don't understand that.
Yeah. Well, that's good stuff. One of the things that, by the way, one of the things that we're going to be doing over the next couple of months is I'm going to be organizing a group of guys from the program, the club, to go around to different clubs and speak. So January, we're going to be going to the Naperville Club. It's called the West Suburban Fellowship Club on Ogden. And in February, and this is speculative, I have to talk to the powers to be, but we're going to be in Villa Park in Anona East. That's the name of the AA club over there. Now, the clubs themselves are independent of Alcoholics Anonymous. Okay, their clubs are made up of group of individuals who have committed to lease space or purchase of buildings with the specific desire of giving these buildings a place where AA can hold meetings, because AA doesn't own anything, okay? But it's good to have these meetings, and it's good to be part of these. And so I'm going to get together. Maybe you want to be part of it. Maybe you could be one of the speakers that we go around and tell our stories on Saturday or Sunday morning, whenever they need us. We're going to try to rotate between, get a little fresh blood, and, you know, maybe we'll be coming to a club near you. You know, if you have a club and you want us to come out and give a lead or something, or if you'd like to come and give a lead on the air here, you can either call it in or you can call me up and offer your story, and maybe we'll have you on as a guest speaker like James was here. You're listening to the final minutes of The Road to Recovery. We're going to be done in about 3 minutes, 2 minutes, and we want to thank everybody for coming. Thanks, Pam, for always going 90 seconds, a minute and a half. I want to thank James for showing up, Mr. X for not being here, but getting you to come out here, and we wish him well. We wish everybody well in these upcoming holiday months. You know, it's you know, sometimes it's tough to be around family, and you know, but you don't have to drink over it, okay? Go to a club. There's our club had vigils, so they had somebody staffing it 24 hours where you can go and get some help and get and surrender. So just remember, don't drink and don't drive. I want you to have a good week, unless you have other plans. See us on the air next week from 7 to 9 p.m. here on the Road to Recovery. Again, thanking everybody for the participation, for listening. Hopefully we carried some message of importance to you. And if not, I sure feel a whole lot better talking about you.
I do.
Yeah, we all feel better. Pam, how about you?
I learn something every time.
Yeah, and it's
I really do.
Yeah, and it's great to have people along in our journey in recovery. And that's what it is. It's not a destination. It's a journey, okay? Some people claim that they're recovered. Maybe they are in, what do they call that, where you you retard the disease, but it's not gone. It's never gone.
Remission.
Okay? But listen, folks, have a great week. Thanks again for listening to The Road to Recovery. This is Dan Chuba signing off. Have a great week, unless you have other plans. Take care.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.